Before we start today's episode, I want to give a big shout out to PJ. PJ, thank you so much for listening to us for 2 years. That is a long time, and you've heard us through a lot of changes, so I'm very glad you stuck around. And while I have your attention, I just wanted to give an apology. A lot has happened in the last few weeks, making it very hard for me to have an episode out and ready for you all. So I apologize again. This year so far for me has been very busy, but always in my spare time will I be working on this podcast. So thank you again and enjoy. Deep within the frigid expanse of the Alaskan Arctic, a world of mystery and seclusion opens itself. Here, on the brink of an endless emptiness, one finds themselves entangled in the cruel grip of bone-chilling cold and darkness, a frightening feeling of floating into a realm beyond reasoning, where the natural and supernatural interconnect in cryptic riddles, is left by the unceasing howl of the wind and the blinding attack of the snow. Indigenous creatures have been crafting their complex traditions to this mysterious landscape for millennia. However, what makes Alaska unique is the alluring promise of discovery and the urgent call to adventure. In the middle of this harsh country, there is a secret hidden under the veil of the unknown, a pyramid hidden under the Alaskan ground, ready to be discovered by the daring adventurer. As Alaska unfolds, it becomes apparent that it is a fabric laced with secrets and ancient wisdom, blurring the boundaries between modern mystery and conventional legend. This is the sort of story you hear on shows like The X-Files, Twin Peaks, and Fringe, where the paranormal and the real world converge in a symphony of suspense and mystery. Strange stories and unexplained happenings linger like ghosts in the fog, in the shadowy corners of little towns and long-forgotten regions of the planet. It's a story that encourages the curious and the daring, pulling them into a maze of twists and secrets, where each new place of information reveals a more profound mystery. This story is a journey into the heart of the unexplained, where truth is stranger than fiction. Imagine Agent Dale Cooper solving the mysteries hidden behind the charming facade in Twin Peaks. Or imagine Agent Mulder and Scully investigating the shadows of the government cover-ups and ET encounters. Or the Fringe team exploring the boundaries of science and reality itself. Today's story comes from Linda Moulton Howell. I ran into this story on her YouTube channel, clicked on it, and started watching this unbelievable story. Linda Moulton Howell is a name synonymous with investigative journalism in the realm of ufology and the paranormal. Born with an insatiable curiosity, Linda embarks on a journey that would lead her to uncovering some of the most perplexing mysteries of our time. Her career took off in the 1970s, when she started working as a reporter for the regional CBS station. Little did she know that her path would soon veer into uncharted territory. It was during her time as a journalist that Linda stumbled upon reports of strange occurrences, mysterious crop circles, and unexplained animal mutilations, and eyewitness accounts of UFO sightings. Armed with her investigative skills and her determination, she delved deep into the heart of these mysteries. She conducted extensive research, interviewed eyewitnesses, and meticulously pieced together evidence that challenged conventional explanations. Over the years, she has continued to investigate a wide range of paranormal phenomena, from government cover-ups to alleged ET encounters. This story takes us to Alaska, 1989. What if there was a secret hidden in the pyramids that might completely alter our understanding of how power and energy are transmitted? According to recent study, it's possible that the pyramids were constructed with the intention of using wireless energy to generate and transmit power. This theory relies on the notion that the pyramids' design and shape and their use of granite and limestone allowed them to function as enormous energy conductors. Also, there is a vast network of subterranean passages and chambers beneath the pyramids that may have utilized them to concentrate and intensify the energy. There are a number of examples of wireless energy transmission in use today, proving that the idea is not new. The technology is already being used in many different applications, such as Tesla's wireless power transfer system and wireless charging pads. According to one theory, the pyramids were constructed with a large crystal at the core, which served as both an energy transmitter and a receiver. The Earth's magnetic field and solar energy would have been utilized to charge the crystal, which would then have been used to wirelessly transfer the energy to other regions of the pyramid or the surrounding lands. In 1998, British author Christopher Dunn explored the notion of using the pyramids as a power plant in his book, The Giza Power Plant. Dunn claims that the Great Pyramid of Giza was actually a device that generated power using hydrogen. He contends that the interior passageways and chambers of the pyramid were intended to trigger a chemical reaction to produce hydrogen gas, which was subsequently utilized to power an electric generator. The concept of wireless power transfer using obliques is another aspect of the power hidden within the pyramid. Obliques were tall, thin pillars that were frequently utilized as markers and monuments in ancient Egypt. Some academics speculate that obliques might have also served as a wireless power infrastructure, carrying electricity from the pyramids to other places. The Giza Pyramid in Cairo, Egypt, stands at a height of 445 feet. The Dark Pyramid in Alaska has generated attention, towering at 550 feet. Douglas Allen Mochler, a retired U.S. Army counterintelligence warrant officer, gained prominence for discussing the alleged Dark Pyramid in Alaska during an interview in 2012. Before diving into the pyramid, he verified his identity and military background. Douglas, drawing from his experience as a former intelligence operative, expressed his belief that the government is concealing information. In 1989, he specifically requested to be stationed in Alaska for his first assignment. Upon arrival, he promptly acquired detailed maps from the GSA office, that's the General Services Administration, covering every corner of the state. Upon investigating the maps at home, he discovered a particular aspect, a section of the map that had been deliberately obscured, particularly in the western part of the state. The map indicated that this section hadn't been surveyed since 1989, which struck him as peculiar, although he didn't dwell on it at the time. Fast forward to 1992. Douglas found himself in the orderly room alongside 40 other people, watching a news broadcast. The report detailed a Chinese underground nuclear detonation that had occurred on May 22nd of that year. China had informed the United Nations in advance of their intentions, leading to geologists gathering to capture the best recording of the Earth's crust and mantle using the seismic waves generated by the explosion. Their findings revealed something astonishing beneath Alaska, a pyramid larger than the one in Egypt. The geologists admitted uncertainty about its composition, whether solid or hollow, but they unmistakably outlined the shape of a pyramid. It was at this moment that Douglas realized they were describing the whited-out section of his map. Shocked by the startling revelation on TV, Douglas rushed home to record the news broadcast. Setting up his recorder, he eagerly awaited the segment, only to be met with silence as the broadcast abruptly went off air. In a state of confusion, he turned to his father, a dedicated news enthusiast who followed broadcasts religiously. Assuming his father must have seen the same report, he called him up, asking about the pyramid discussed in the news. And to his surprise, his father had no recollection of any such story. Convinced it might have been a local broadcast exclusive to Anchorage, Alaska, Douglas decided to visit the station to request a copy of the segment. Upon reaching the TV station and speaking to the general manager, he was met with outright denial. The manager insisted they hadn't aired any story about a pyramid. Now, Douglas, feeling defeated, he prepared to leave. But as he was leaving, he noticed a technician observing him intently. And curious, he approached the technician, who said, "We did run that story, but I can't get it for you. It's gone." In 1993, Douglas found himself at Fort Meade, standing within a vast warehouse where he described as brimming with archives of information. So, driven by curiosity, he began searching through records related to archaeological sites or anything pertaining to Alaska. And his search led him to two safes, akin to large containers. And just as he was about to dive into their contents, two individuals approached him from behind. And without warning, they informed him firmly, "You don't have a need to know, and you have to leave." Years later, a man only known as John Smith stepped forward after hearing Douglas' story on Coast to Coast AM in 2012. According to John, his adopted father, who was employed at Western Electric from 1959 to 1961, was involved in a clandestine project centered around a powerful electrical system located within a pyramid of unknown origins, buried 700 feet beneath the surface of Alaska. John recounted that his father was approached by two representatives from an unknown military branch while working at Western Electric. These representatives flew his father to Alaska, where upon landing, they whisked him away and others in a blacked-out van. Remarkably, John's father carried a compass with him, and upon entering the van, they embarked on a 6-hour journey headed mostly east. Upon reaching their destination, they descended via an elevator resembling a mining shaft, plummeting 700 feet below ground level. He described how his father worked in a designated area adjacent to the underground structure referred to as the Dark Pyramid. They were provided with accommodations resembling a bunkhouse, complete with sleeping quarters and a kitchen. Additionally, there was a control room equipped with advanced electrical equipment, including glass transformers and insulators. The hallway from this control room led directly to the corner of the pyramid, where the main focus of their work was. Their primary objective was to devise a method to transmit electricity through the pyramid. This task consumed their efforts and expertise during the time at the site. John's recollections of his father's experience in Alaska left a lasting impression. He remembered his father assigning him weird tasks as a child, always emphasizing the importance of precision and specific angles in everything that he did. 2 years ago, Tom DeLonge discussed the mysterious Dark Pyramid on an episode of the Peer Pleasure podcast. Here's what he said.
"There's a pyramid, and it's underground, and they've been studying it for decades. Yeah, it's bigger than Giza. It's not that far from Valdez, I believe. I would have to check on where it's at, but apparently, yeah. And I know a very important person from the Pentagon that met with one of the lead defense contractors who were studying it. And they told him, they said, 'We think we finally know what it's doing. It's turned on. We think it's suppressing consciousness. The legend is that there is an earthquake of sorts, and all the seismographs picked up waves that came, you know, all the way through everything. They saw this whole anomaly, like as those shockwaves went through the land, there was some kind of structure or something that perturbed on the receiving end of these waves. So they dug some tunnels, elevator shafts, made a little strip there to land, and they've been underground studying it forever. That's how the legend is. The news did a little piece on it, and then all of a sudden, that disappeared. The people at the station said all these guys came in and said to never air this again. But on the deathbed of a couple people that were out there, they said they were very aware of it, I think in the beginning. If I remember correctly, it was someone who worked for like Bell Labs. Maybe it was the precursor to AT&T or something like that. I can't remember. I don't want to get too f***ed up because people hang on my words when I talk about it like this. So the only thing I want to say is yes, there's a pyramid and we've been studying it, and I'm pretty much just said everything that I know about it.
A man soon reached out to Linda, insisting on remaining anonymous. He disclosed that his engineer father, after a lengthy career in the Navy, was requested to work on a secretive project in Alaska that emitted a tremendous amount of energy. His father's task was to understand how a pyramid, situated underground, generated such vast energy. However, he could not divulge more due to the classified nature of the project. Upon hearing Douglas and Linda's revelations, Bruce Pearson shared a story his father had once told him. Bruce's father, whom he chose not to name, joined the Navy after the Pearl Harbor attack. He served on a patrol torpedo boat 492 during World War II. In 1976, his father relocated his family to Alaska for a teaching position. In 1978, he encountered an Air Force pilot who had also served on a patrol torpedo boat during the war. After swapping war stories, the pilot invited his father on a parts delivery mission, assuming it was a routine supply drop for an early warning dewline installation. Dewline refers to distant early warning lines, a radar system set up in the 1950s. Spanning from Alaska to Greenland, the purpose of the dewline was to detect Soviet nuclear strikes, ensuring that US bombers could mobilize and ICBMs could launch in response. As their journey began, the pilot clarified that their destination wasn't a dewline installation, but rather a peculiar underground facility. His father inquired if it was a nuclear power plant, but the pilot clarified it wasn't, describing instead an ancient black stone pyramid that began 150 feet underground and extended down to 750 feet. The pilot stated that they couldn't figure out what the structure was or how it worked. After a brief silence, he continued, "Look, this is all off the record. I'm not supposed to tell you this, but I was told this thing puts out enough power to energize the entire state of Alaska and the country of Canada." The co-pilot added that as they approached the location, their helicopter's instruments malfunctioned, necessitating a switch from instrumental flight to visual flight rules. His father witnessed the instruments going haywire. The helicopter's radar went dark. Alarms started going off. The compass was spinning rapidly as they neared the site. He described their cargo as three very heavy, finely machined stainless steel cases. An escort aircraft shadowed their helicopter throughout the trip, landing in a remote tundra where his father observed a blockhouse, fuel storage deposit, and a garage. He noticed a snowcat and a few other vehicles, along with mineshaft elevators surrounded by electrical fencing and elevated guard posts with warning signs. Numerous armed guards in black uniforms flanked jeeps equipped with 50 caliber machine guns, while a circling escort plane lingered overhead. The pilot told his father that he wasn't sure who the guys worked for, but assumed it was a three-letter agency of some kind. After being unloaded and refueled, they departed. 6 years later, his father had lunch with the chief engineer from Bell Labs in Murray Hill, New Jersey. The engineer mentioned his vacation delay because Bell Labs personnel were summoned to Alaska's North Slope to examine a perplexing power station. Now, to me, this is where it gets very interesting, because a few years later, Linda was contacted by a woman who claimed to be a remote viewer and had supposedly seen the pyramid. During her session, she described a remote location featuring a mineshaft and an elevator, electrical fencing, and warning signs. A group of individuals entered the shaft and descended via a staircase to a platform. There, they accessed another elevator. Interestingly, the woman mentioned that the leader of the group appeared humanoid, but distinctly non-human. This second elevator descended about 150 feet to what seemed like an observatory room, filled with computer equipment and a large window. Through this window, one could observe one side of the pyramid and an intricate network of catwalks. The woman believed that the pyramid's purpose was to harness energy from the earth, functioning like a massive transformer. This energy was then emitted from the pyramid's apex, allowing UFOs to hover above it and recharge. So could, in the cold, remote stretches of Alaska, under the shadow of Mount McKinley, actually be an ancient, mysterious, perhaps outer-worldly, alien pyramid? Well, that is for you to decide. Could the Dark Pyramid be related to the Alaskan Triangle? Now, if you know your conspiracy lore, you'll know about the Bermuda Triangle. The Alaskan Triangle is the same thing. The Alaskan Triangle is an area in the state of Alaska that has gained notoriety due to the high number of unexplained disappearances of people, aircraft, and ships. This region roughly encompasses the area between Anchorage in the south-central part of the state, Barrow in the northernmost part, and Juneau in the southeastern part. The mysterious reputation of the Alaskan Triangle has led to various theories and speculations about its causes, ranging from natural phenomena to extraterrestrial activity and paranormal occurrences. Some of the reported disappearances in the area have never been explained. An estimated 16,000 people are thought to have disappeared in this enormous, barren area since 1988. However, the story goes even further back. On October 16, 1972, Cessna 310C with the tail number N1812H vanished from sight. Somewhere between Anchorage and Juneau, the aircraft, owned by Pan-Alaskan Airways, was flown by 38-year-old chief pilot Don Johns, who had exactly 17,000 hours of flight time. Don's passengers included three individuals: Alaska Congressman Nick Beige, Russell Brown, his aide, and Louisiana Congressman Hale Boggs, who was also the United States House of Representatives majority leader at the time. Sadly, the three would never make it to Juneau. They were supposed to attend a rally for Nick, and the aircraft was never found. A thorough investigation of the route found nothing. Don left Anchorage at about 9 in the morning. There was some fog, although visibility was around 1.5 miles, and the weather was evaluated as average. Air traffic control quickly reported the airplane missing to the proper authorities after realizing it was delayed beyond its estimated time of arrival. 39 military and 50 civilian planes combed 325,000 square kilometers over the course of 39 days. Yet, despite this, not a single trace was discovered. Ultimately, this disappearance was recorded as one of the more than 40 active cases including missing airplanes in Alaska since 1962. But what about missing persons? One Thomas Marco Sabal on September 29th, 2012. A man named Thomas Sabal disappeared in Alaska. A native of Germany, he is a survivalist who trained for 6 years at the Talking Drum Outdoor School, where he was also an instructor and was on a 5-month trip through the wilderness. He has had prior experience camping in extreme north, including Norway. Thomas was trained by the Talking Drums Outdoor School founder, Tamarack Song, to make his planned trek. Tamarack said that Thomas took a 6-month leave from teaching at the school Thomas traveled 30 miles up north to the Ambler River. He reached a cabin of a woman that Tamarack had put him in contact with. Thomas stayed with the woman and her son at their cabin until September 27th, when he left with the intention of hiking to the gates of the Arctic National Park and Preserve. Tamarack said that Thomas left behind an unfinished letter at the cabin that indicated that he only intended to be gone for several days. Well, an extensive 13-day aerial and ground search turned up no indication of Thomas's whereabouts. Thomas was 32 years old when he went missing. Naturally, it's important to note that Thomas was no stranger to this kind of terrain and was well aware of the risks. As previously stated, he had extensive training and experience spending time in extreme conditions. The Alaska State Troopers made a last-ditch effort to locate Thomas on November 20th. They had been using a two-seater Super Cub up until then, which was slow to fly, but perfect for the valleys. However, they struggled with the highland winds, which is where Thomas was drawn to. So they employed a six-seater Piper Navajo so they could launch 4 to 5 spotters into the air. One plane, after looking for 3 days, discovered a circle drawn on the gravel bar 8 miles north of Unalee Creek, well up the Ambler River. After landing, they searched to see whether it might be the O from SOS, but they couldn't find any evidence linking the circle to Thomas. Thomas could have built the sign himself to indicate a location where he had placed supplies, so it is quite plausible that he etched the sign. However, a day later, the plane went back to the location to look for new hints and to take pictures, but nothing was discovered. Unfortunately, Thomas was declared legally dead in 2013. With some controversies, the search operations and the unwillingness to interact with the Native American community were the subject of that controversy. Sharon Buse disappeared May 23rd, 2014, at Mount Roberts Trail, Alaska. Since approximately 2004, Sharon Buse made Juneau, Alaska her home. She worked as a physical therapist with June Physical Therapy, which had an office in Alaska Club in the Valley. The final day she worked was a Thursday, May 22nd, 2014. She had just returned from an ice camping trip in Greenland. She was an accomplished hiker and biker who had traveled from Alaska to Canada. She also enjoyed kayaking, hockey, and running as well. 48-year-old Sharon Buse hiked alone on May 23, 2014, in the Mount Roberts area of Alaska, but she didn't leave a message or let anyone know her specific destination. So on May 24th, she was supposed to go hiking with a friend at 8:45 a.m., but she never showed up. According to receipts troopers discovered in Sharon's car, she was last seen at Alaska Marine Lines, a company in downtown Juneau, close to the rock dump, at 9:30 a.m. on May 23rd. After Sharon missed a hike with the Juneau Alpine Club, her longtime hiking companion, Annie Johnson, reported her missing to the police. On May 24th, they were scheduled to trek to Hawthorne Peak at 9 in the morning. Buse's disappearance was highly unusual for her. Sharon was sporting colorful sportwear when she was last seen in Juneau's downtown area. At the time, her left hand was in a black cast, with brown hair, blue eyes, scars on her knee, left hand, neck, and shoulder. She had tattoos on her upper left arm and shoulder. She stood at a height of 5'8", weighing at 135 pounds with blue eyes. It's important to note that she also had an orthopedic screw somewhere implanted in her body. Feeling terrible about her no-show, Annie departed an early wedding reception to drive around the Juneau area, stopping at trailheads in an attempt to locate Sharon's car. At approximately 9:30 p.m. on May 24th, Annie discovered Sharon's vehicle at the Mount Roberts trailhead. On Sunday, May 25th, at around 1 in the morning, the search for Buse began. Southeast Alaskan Dogs, the U.S. Coast Guard, and the Alpine Club were active in the Juneau local search and rescue community, which was organized by Alaska State Troopers. Many family members and friends searched the Mount Juneau Trail Network for Sharon. The Mount Roberts Tramway Cafeteria served as a command center for search and rescue operations. The search was extended to include the wilderness on Monday, May 26. The next day, searchers reduced the area and resumed their search over Mount Roberts and Mount Juneau. They concentrated on Mount Juneau and the less rugged lower portion of the Mount Roberts climb on Wednesday. Using FLIR thermal imaging equipment and night vision, the Coast Guard searched by helicopter on Sunday night, but found no clues. The following day, an additional 3 hours were spent conducting an airborne search that encompassed the Granite Creek Basin, Sheep Creek Drainage, Mount Roberts, and Juneau ridgelines. These were the places where covering the ravines and snowfields by ground searchers was not safe. The quality of the snow in these places were declining. We've been all over these hillsides, and again, assessing where it's likely she might have been at, the search team stated. We extensively checked that region. And then we looked outside of it twice, and then we looked again in the places where she might have gone, but is unlikely. We've double-checked even those places, they said. So on Sunday, May 25th, dogs appeared interested in the trail above Mount Roberts Tram, albeit they were not necessarily alerted to scent. A different search and rescue dog picked up on her smell on Tuesday morning near Mount Roberts Trailhead, which is adjacent to the Basin Road parking lot. It was noted at some point during the investigation that, regretfully, Sharon's portable GPS-enabled emergency device was discovered at her home. They also found her overnight bag. However, her phone was nowhere to be found, and the cell company was unable to locate it, suggesting that it was most likely turned off. After searching the Mount Roberts and Juneau route systems for 4 days, the Alaska State Troopers seized their hunt for Sharon. And in the eyes of many friends and family members, it was just too early. Detective Nick Garza of Juneau Police Department reported that on July 6, 2014, they had received a lead from a hiker stating that he was in the area down located at the end of the preservation trail system. Down there, he saw a bear and wondered if it had found something to eat or was just hanging around. Well, a few days after the lead was received, Juneau Mountain Rescue and Alaska State Troopers conferred, and a small search group was dispatched. However, the searchers came up empty-handed. Garza claimed to have made multiple searches of Buse's home, but had turned up nothing of noteworthy. Although the Juneau Police Department isn't ruling out the idea, he stated that there is currently no reason to assume foul play. On August 2014, Brian Weed, a local with knowledge of Juneau's former mining shafts, organized a small team to look for Sharon inside closed mine shafts on top Mount Roberts. But you can guess how that ended. Sharon vanished from sight, and no remains or clues were ever found in the region despite a thorough search. Unfortunately, she was never seen again. There's just one more thing I want to talk about. They're often referred to as the Alaskan Monster, the Aitchinrack. The Aitchinrack are a legendary race of small, human-like creatures with incredible abilities. There are stories about them that claim they live in a parallel dimension, but can freely enter our world. It is believed that the Aitchinrack came from a mystical realm filled with ancient magic, a supernatural universe similar to our own, if you will. It is said that they have been given an array of supernatural powers, from manipulating elements to creating illusions and changing their shape. These mysterious beings are reported to reside in the frigid regions of the Arctic, seeking sanctuary in caves, mountainous regions, and underground dwellings. Although their features vary, most accounts describe them as having dark skin, piercing eyes that resemble obsidian, and pointed ears. They are fierce hunters with exceptional strength, dexterity, and intelligence. They are skilled with bows and arrows and are frequently dressed in clothing made from the skins of Arctic animals. Stories about the Aichenrak portray them as evil beings that cause disorientation and confusion in anybody who comes into contact with them, even if they are elusive. People who live in the Arctic are afraid and suspicious of them, since they have been linked to a number of unexplained disappearances involving adults and children. They are mostly known through folklore and stories that have been passed down through generations. There are many different ways to interpret their legend, and other nuances that adds to the mystery. Some legends even attribute them to have the power to control the very weather itself, explaining their deep connection to the Arctic landscape. Could these mysterious creatures have a connection to the Dark Pyramid and the mysterious disappearance reported all across Alaska? Given the speculation surrounding their underground presence, it's possible that they are aware of the Dark Pyramid and could possibly be its guardians. However, in the heart of the mystery surrounding the Alaskan Triangle, one is left to wonder if there are other forces at work in the strange disappearances of planes and ships. And that will conclude today's episode. Thank you so much for listening to Bizarre Conspiracies. I'm very interested in hearing what you think about today's episode. Why don't you leave me your thoughts and opinions and theories on today's subject? I would love to read about what you guys think. If you want to email me or Conrad, you can do so at bizarreconspiracies@gmail.com. That is all one word, bizarreconspiracies@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening. And as always, I will catch you in the next episode.